This is Shanna Etter. Today is November 3rd, 2016. I'm a student at UW-Madison. I am interviewing Dr. Marcelo Windmuller Campione. This interview is taking place at the 2016 Society of American Foresters National Convention in Madison, Wisconsin at the Monona Terrace Convention Center. This interview is sponsored by the Society of American Foresters and the University of Wisconsin Oral History Program and is part of the SAF Oral History Project. Could you say your name and spell your last name?
Yep. Marcella Windmuller Campione, WindMullER CAMPIONE.
Thank you. To start off, could you tell me the story of how you came to be a forester?
Yeah. So I guess I always knew I didn't want to work in an office or I guess a more traditional field. Like, I didn't want to be stuck in an office. So it kind of dates back. My parents would take us on these 2 or 3 week long vacations in the summer, and we'd go to different national parks, different national forests. And I guess I fell in love with the idea of being a park ranger or something outside. I didn't know what that would be, but I knew I wanted to work outside. And my parents, my mom is a civil engineer, my dad is a principal, or was a principal, he just retired. But so when I was looking at colleges and degrees, I originally thought I wanted to do environmental science. But environmental science degrees can be kind of vague, and they started looking and helping me research, and they found forestry, and they found that it was an accredited degree, and that they really, really responded to, because there was some kind of larger body that was investing in the degree, investing in the program, and there you were, no matter where you got your forestry degree, there's this underlying knowledge that you would come away with. And being an educator and an engineer, they really liked that idea, and I'm really glad at 18 I had no idea how important getting that accredited degree would be, but I'm really glad their involvement and their steering me towards that forestry degree. So I got my BS from Michigan Tech, and I guess kind of took my first silviculture course and fell in love with that. And after that, I just kind of kept going on with a master's and then a PhD. And during that time, I realized I really liked research, and I also really enjoyed teaching. So if there was a way that I could somehow merge those two and get a faculty position in that all-competitive academic world, life would be good. And somehow the position opened up at the University of Minnesota, and I was competitive for it. And now I'm a little over a year at the University of Minnesota as the silviculture professor. And so that's kind of how I became a forester and where I am right now.
Could you tell me a little bit more about your career as a forester now?
Yeah, so my position, I do 50% research, 50% teaching, and I'm also told 50% outreach and service. So, I teach the silviculture class at the University of Minnesota, and that's a small class, which is really nice. It gives me the ability to connect with students. And I do a lot of interactive learning, so I use a flipped classroom, so students listen to me lecture on their own time. It's through YouTube, so all the lectures are videotaped. They can watch it in the morning or evening with their choice of a beverage. And then in class, we're doing hands-on activities. That could be small group discussions. That could be peer-reviewed literature we're reading and discussing. We can be getting outside and measuring trees and talking about stocking guides and kind of applying these theories in class together. And I think it helps, because often when I've seen when students get homework, they get it home and they're like, oh no, what do I do? But in class, there's someone there, whether it's myself or the TA, to kind of get over that stumbling block. And we get to go on 3 or 4 field trips throughout the year to kind of look at, you've seen these thoughts, these theories in lecture, now let's look at how they're actually applied. And throughout the class, I keep talking about this art and science of silviculture. And we've learned a lot about the science. Now let's talk about the art of how this is actually applied and what this looks like in the real world. So I teach that class with a lab, and then I also teach every other year an introductory ecology class called Managed Systems, and that I co-teach with someone from horticulture. So the idea is to bring students who may not be in either agriculture or forestry or natural resources, and kind of exposes them to why we manage our systems, whether it's agriculture or forestry, and just this idea that management is not a scary word. It's not a bad word. We manage our forests for a lot of different reasons, and from that management, we get a lot of very valuable products. We can do wildlife habitat restoration. There's just this whole range of things. So it's my first time teaching that class, and it's a class of 70, so it's a little bit different, but it's really, I guess it's interesting seeing these 18 and 19-year-olds kind of on their first part of this college journey, kind of opening up and seeing different things and asking really great questions. So that's, I guess, the teaching side of my my job. The research side is kind of just starting off, so it's just been a year, but I guess the focus of my research is kind of alternative silviculture, managing for climate change and future forest health, and how do we use these tools that we have in different ways to maintain products, but also maintain all these multiple objectives that we have to maintain. So working with the DNR, both Wisconsin and Minnesota, working with county lands, working with the Forest Service, trying to figure out how we can manage these systems in different ways. So one project that, for example, that we just started up is using biochar. So it's a waste product, or it can be a waste product. And the idea is that the biochar will allow greater water retention during the summer months, so help seedlings kind of make it through the droughty time a little better. So we're starting up some research looking at if that's actually working and if we're seeing increased survival or increased growth of some jack pine up in northern Minnesota. So there's hopefully this kind of increased in survival and growth, but also this new product that could be used or produced from the wood industry. And then another part of my job, and I guess this is both research and kind of the service output, is I'm the instructor for the National Advanced Silviculture Program, and I do Module 1. So it brings together Forest Service employees, BIA, BLM, and it's part of this training program for federal employees to become certified silviculturists. So they take 4 modules together throughout a year, and these modules are about 2 weeks long. And then they do an additional module in their local area. So I teach the first module, and it's called Ecological Systems, and we cover this kind of, it's a graduate level course, and we cover this kind of basic silvics, how we think about ecology, how we think about silviculture, and we bring together about 7 or 8 faculty members in hydrology and soils to cover all this baseline information, so the students can kind of come away from this class refreshed and have this great background, advanced learning in how forest functions and how you use those tools to develop silvicultural prescriptions.
How have you been involved with the Society of American Foresters?
Yeah, so my first meeting was when I was a junior, and that I believe was in Portland, Oregon. And I guess I was a member of the SAF / Forestry Club at Michigan Tech since I was a freshman, and then became an officer my junior year. I was the president. We went to SAF and competed in Quiz Bowl, and I guess I've been kind of coming back ever since. There's been a few off years with, depending on whether I had something to present or other things, but I've been going, for a good number of years now. And I guess what I like is that each year, I guess my world gets a little smaller and there's a lot more faces I recognize around the meeting. And I guess it's a time to see people, to network, and just to catch up on life with these, with, I guess, friends and colleagues and I guess new contacts. So I started as an undergrad in SAF, and I guess I've kind of stayed involved during my master's with the Michigan Tech Club, but also coming to the national meetings and also the state meetings for Michigan, and then out in Utah, again, doing the state meetings. And now at the University of Minnesota, I'm a co-advisor for the student chapter there, so it's been fun. It's interesting remembering how that first SAF experience, or just how this community can shape. So we're really trying to become active with the Minnesota chapter and also our local kind of Twin Cities southern region, getting students connected with members, student members connected with, I guess, not adult members, but the chapter members, and really forging that relationship and building those connections together.
This project was developed to understand people's perceptions of diversity and inclusion in the forestry profession. How has your ethnicity, cultural background, or gender influenced your career as a forester?
I guess I've been very blessed to have wonderful mentors, and those mentors are both male and female, but seeing really strong women in forestry really kind of cemented in my mind that I could become a professor, I could do this, and having those mentors were really great. And that's not to downplay the male mentors in my life, because they've definitely provided a lot of guidance, and I still come back to PhD advisor Jim Long and ask for a lot of advice. But I think it's just, there's a really special bond, it seems, between women in this organization, whether you know them personally or just even laughing about how at this conference we don't have lines at the bathroom. Just those kind of small connections, I think, are really special between the women in this organization. And each year I seem to meet new women that we have a lot more in common. So I think that's a really positive aspect. And I guess being a woman, especially in silviculture, in this very applied discipline, I definitely get some looks sometimes when I'm out in the woods, but mostly I think I haven't had, I guess, really negative experience of people kind of discounting me or not, I guess, seeing my viewpoints as valid or writing me off. So I probably have a lot of women in previous generations to thank for that kind of experience that I've had.
What are your thoughts about diversity and inclusion in the forestry profession?
I think we're changing and society's changing, and it's not only diversity, but it's just how we communicate and how we convey what a forester is, that a forester isn't just some guy in flannel T-shirt and Carhartt jeans and their their boots. It's this range of professions and this range of ideas. And I think that's really exciting, this range that we have. And somehow making sure we break out of that stereotype, because that stereotype is fun and it's funny and it has provided a lot of jokes of but just I think these conventions always impress me because there's just such a range of diversity and people that are working on really interesting topics and ideas and everything from the social science aspect to the economics to this kind of conversion of agriculture and forestry and everything in between. So I think just making sure, and I don't know when we start, but or how we target it, but making sure that students, whether they're high school or grade school, see what a forester is as something that's broad and not something that's specific, but something that this degree, this career can take you in so many different places that you might not have ever expected it to go.
Do you feel the forestry profession is welcoming to new ideas and new people?
I think so. I think for the most part, yeah. I think there's some things that are ingrained and there's some things that take a while to learn, but I think for the most part there's this realization that times are changing, and I mean, these smartphones, cell phones, GPS, everything has kind of changed how we do our jobs as foresters. So understanding how that transition works I think is important. And I also think the educators, I mean, all the professors I had through my degrees have just really been open to looking at things in a different way and challenging students to think about these problems as not, there's not one solution. These are really complex problems, and we're going to need people of different backgrounds and different ideas to help solve these problems, because if we only do one thing one way, we only get one outcome. That doesn't always fit. And so I think foresters in general are pretty open. I mean, I'm sure there's a range of people, but a range of personalities. But I think in general, yeah.
What role can the Society of American Foresters play in enhancing diversity and inclusion?
I think just being this kind of open place and kind of welcoming students, because I think that first convention, that first experience, and whether that's at the convention or whether it's through a local meeting, but that first experience of seeing this range and this broad view, and that, hey, there is someone that is like me, or there is someone that's interested in the same thing, I think helps our profession and helps maintain membership. So I think doing this kind of thing, and also whether it's the formal or the informal mentorship that really happens through this organization, I think that's important. And that doesn't have to be one-on-one or anything huge, but I think, I guess I see this organization, this convention, as a place for me to really connect with a lot of people, and I might not see them all the time, but it allows me to connect with them once a year to catch up and just really maintain those relationships.
Where do you see the profession of forestry going in the next 20 years?
That's a good question. That's a really good question. I like to say that that some of the issues that we're having will hopefully be worked out, but I think we're going to have a lot of big issues to tackle, and a lot of them have to do with forest health, with new insects and invasive species, and that changing our landscape and changing how we manage. And also figuring out how to convey the right message. Because I think SAF has done a great job making sure that foundation of the science is there in the undergrad courses. But figuring out how to sell forestry, especially to private landowners, I think is going to be a bigger and bigger thing. And that communication part is going to be key. So how do we communicate, and how do we make sure we're communicating effectively, will be really important. So I think that's going to be, I guess that's what I see, that students in the future will still need the solid foundation, but will be having to interact with even more people than they do right now. And not trying to convince or trying to sell, but just really making sure that across these political lines, whether it's federal or state or county, that we're working effectively to kind of tackle some of these bigger issues. And I guess in the Lake States, it's probably invasive species and forest health. In the West, it might be water quality, maintaining water issues. So I don't think the forestry profession is going anywhere. If anything, we need us more. We need more of them. But just how we sell ourselves might change.
If you were to think of a larger time scale, say 100 years into the future.
Oh man, I would hope we've figured out some. I'm hoping we still have ash after emerald ash borer. Hoping we've reintroduced chestnut. I'm hoping we've figured out wildfire and also wildfire budgeting, and also making sure people really remember that it's important to connect to the forest. And disconnect from cell phones, disconnect from that there is just a lot, there can be a lot of peace and a lot of important things, both spiritually, mentally, physically, that you get from a forest. And for a forest to be healthy, you need a good forester.
So what do you feel are the most rewarding aspects of your career?
I think it has a lot to do with interacting with students and interacting with them and seeing them grow. This meeting, I'll get to see one of my field assistants for my PhD, and she's looking to start a master's program. So just seeing how people grow in their career and how, I guess, students start silviculture and some of them don't even know what silviculture is, start silviculture class and have no idea what that word means. And by the end, they have this terminology, they have this background, and they're just really progressed in what they're thinking. So I think that's a big reward. And also, I guess, with research, you're always asking questions, and there's always new questions out there. So it's this, I guess, kind of continual game of finding out what the question is, and also how do you fund it, and how do you answer it, what does that lead to? I guess you never really answer it, but it always leads to some kind of follow-up. So it's this kind of complex game that can be described as fun. Sometimes it's frustrating, sometimes it's exciting, but it's never boring, that's for sure.
What have been the biggest challenges in your career?
Well, I guess I'm just starting off, so there's just establishing, figuring out what's my niche, how to get established, how to fund people, how to balance, I think. So balancing this career with a family, with with life. And I guess I feel lucky enough that this is something I truly love. And I mean, as my son grows up, I'll get to take him outside a lot. And there's ways to kind of combine work and life. And I guess have a little bit of the best of both worlds. But I think just kind of getting started in this very challenging, competitive, tenure run track.
Can you think of a specific person that helped you along the way, and how did they help you?
Yeah, so I guess both my master's advisor Linda Nagel and then my PhD advisor Jim Long have just been, I guess that's not one person but two, they've just been so instrumental in helping me grow as both an individual, as a researcher. They've been really wonderful mentors, and I guess they still are mentors. But just kind of being able to bounce ideas off of them, also being able to ask for advice. How as a woman, when you go and tell your department head you're pregnant, how does that go? What does that look like? So they've both just been really valuable people, and I've learned a lot from them academically, but also, I think, more important, personally.
What advice would you give to a student or a new forester just starting off?
Stay involved. Stay involved. It's easy to get wrapped up in life, in your family, and think of your job as something you go to and then go home. But I guess these relationships that you can build through SAF can become a kind of second family and become a place where you feel comfortable and you can call home. So I guess as you're transitioning from a student to a new professional, stay involved and keep building that network, because that network's just going to keep getting smaller and smaller. And then also just ask for opportunities. If you see something, ask for it. Or if you see something that's lacking, ask for it. Because oftentimes no one else sees it, and just by asking for it, asking, oh, can I go to this convention, or why don't we have this training, or something else, that might be all the push it's needed, and then you're here. So, yeah.
Great. So, to finish up, we have two last questions. The first is just some basic demographic information. So, what year were you born?
1987.
What gender do you identify as?
Female.
What is your ethnic, racial, or cultural background?
Caucasian.
Would you like to add anything about forestry, the Society of American Foresters, or diversity that we didn't cover?
No, this was a lot of fun.
Good. Well, thank you.
Thank you.